From Buck Studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark here again with Family Doc Zorba Pastor to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice and great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for the good doc, the number to call is 800-462-7413. And of course, along with your calls, we have some topics to talk about, Zorba.
Exercise and brain chemistry. How do you protect your brain? And what does that mean, actually, when you're getting older and you worry about memory, which is actually a very common problem as you get older? I mean, teenagers never worry about their memory. They worry about other things. But as you get over a certain age, you worry about your memory. You were smiling there. We're not going to talk about the other things that teenagers think about. That's a different topic. And virtual reality may make therapy easier. Is it easier to talk to an avatar than it is to talk to a therapist?
Okay. And what's a special recipe?
Spicy masala omelet. Spicy masala omelet. If you like spice and you like eggs, you will like this recipe.
I'm looking forward. To the phones we go now, though, Zorba, at 1-800-462-7413. 800-462-7413. Let's welcome our first caller, Zorba, a listener with us in Eau Claire, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hey, how's it going there, Dr. Zorba?
Good, thank you. Good, thank you.
How can we help?
Well, about 2 years ago, I started to get an episode of one day of some nausea, a little bubbling in my tummy and the left abdomen, and then I'd get fatigue for about 7 to 10 days. So I went in, got some tests, and, you know, everything was negative. And then I went in about a month and a half later, I got another episode. And it's all the same, about 7 to 10 days, about a month, month and a half in between. And then it turns out I got a really bad case the third or fourth time, and I went in, and it turned out to be mono.
Oh.
I mean, I've had chest x-rays. Uh-huh. I'm 40. The chest x-rays, blood exams, I mean, lung x-rays, I've had, you know, they did everything. I have a colonoscopy. I did celiac tests, all that stuff. And it turns out every time I have this bout, I go in and my mono spikes it up again.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not fighting it off. So I'm probably on like the eighth or ninth time.
Wow.
I'm currently having one now.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I can exercise through it. I exercise it every day. You know, I try to do those homeopathic things. But yeah, it's kind of we're at the point where the doc's like, well, there's no virus thing, you know, there's no shot for it, so you kind of deal.
First of all, the issue is you had some viral infection with mono. The mono may no longer be in your body, but your body may still be fighting what was in your body before. And we don't have an accurate way of measuring it because we can't measure mono. We can measure antibodies. We can look at spikes in antibodies. You know, there's been a theory for years that there may be a long mono, just like there's a long COVID. And the reality is these viral infections, you know, with COVID, we now realize they're much more transmissible than we thought of. They can last a lot longer than we thought of, and we have no way of really measuring it. We have no way of, like, numbers to say, well, it's going up or going down. We don't really know what those numbers mean. But we do know that you have these recurrent episodes. So are the episodes the same each and every time? What? Tell me a little bit more about the episodes.
They're the same each and every time, except for that one time in this last summer that would seem to have been the worst one, about 2 weeks. It would be your normal mono break where you're like sleeping all day. You know, I'm tired. I'm waking up. I'm going to my job every day. But basically what happens is I'll be feeling fine. I'll start to get a little bit of nausea. I'll get these little bubbles going on in my left abdomen. And then the nausea will go away and I'll just feel fatigued for about 7 to 10 days.
Wow.
It gets a little bit better at nighttime. I do go to the gym sometimes, work through it.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah.
Mm-hmm. How's your diet? What's your diet? Are you have a pretty good diet?
Yeah, I mean, I do the intermittent fasting, and then I drink my healthy shakes, eggs, lean meat. Mm-hmm. I don't eat a lot of deep-fried food. I don't eat a lot of sugar.
Like sounds like your diet is pretty good. Any stress in your life? What kind of stressors do you
have?
Well, everyone's got stress in their life. But
yeah, I mean, during this last 2 years, I went back for a second college degree, and we just had a baby, and I work a 40-hour job.
How old's your baby?
1 month now.
1 month, congratulations! And 1 month old baby.
Thank you.
You're not going to get a going to get a full night's sleep for years. So you might as well. Actually, you may get it now. They sleep a lot that first month. So you've got a new baby.
Yes.
Got a new baby. You've got this thing happening intermittently. So have you tried the FODMAP diet? FODMAP.
I have not. I've not heard of that.
Okay. I want you to Google it. F as in Frank, O-D, M as in Mary, A-P, and we'll put it up on the website. The FODMAP diet is an interesting diet for people with irritable bowel syndrome. Irritable bowel syndrome is just a catch-all syndrome where we don't know what's going on. You know, we don't know what is actually happening. And so we put it into stuff that we think that there may be things that are going on in our colon with our the bacteria that live in our colon and do some good things and do some bad things. So some people find that their gut is better following the FODMAP diet for a month. So you follow it for a month. It's a strange diet, and there's certain things you eat. It has to do with fermentable oligo and disaccharides. It has to do with how we basically digest certain carbohydrates. And I would look at the FODMAP diet because often it sort of reboots the colon. And I think your problem is probably in the colon. Probably set off of the virus. Virus may not be in your body. But the real issue is how do we sort of kickstart your colon so you stop having all of these. And the FODMAP diet often really works for people. It's not a drug. It's not homeopathic. The other thing is, are you taking any probiotics at all?
I don't take a probiotic anymore. I do take a multivitamin and some apple cider vinegar, but I did take a probiotic for the longest period of time, about six months, and it didn't do anything.
Okay, so I wouldn't do that. The final thing is, do you tolerate yogurt? Do you like yogurt?
I love it. Tolerate it.
Yogurt is something you should have every day because yogurt is a natural probiotic. It's lactobacillus, and you want to keep that in there. So FODMAP diet, take some yogurt. That's what I would look at. The other thing is there are a couple of medications you get from your doctor. One is called Bentyl, B-E-N-T-Y-L, and there are other medications that sometimes help with your gut issues that may be useful for you when you have problems. But I would go to FODMAP. That's what I would do. That's what you need. And the virus just did you wrong. Did you wrong.
Okay. Well,
and congratulations on that baby. Right, Tom?
Thank
new baby.
Thank you very much.
That's it. New baby.
Absolutely.
He's precious, that's for sure.
All right. You take care. Thanks for your call.
Thank you, Dr. Zorba.
Thanks.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
800-462-7413. Zorba, remember years ago when I got mono twice?
Do I remember when you got mono?
Do you remember what you told me?
No, I don't.
That's okay, you said. You now have stereo.
Did I say that to you? Now have stereo.
I was a really, really, really good doctor. 800-462-7413. It's 800-462-7413.
That went in one ear and out the other. In one ear and out the other. You now
have
stereo.
We have a voicemail now, Zorba, from New York.
Hello. I wanted to ask the question about what's an appropriate diet when someone's been diagnosed with a stomach ulcer? Because I was diagnosed with a stomach ulcer and handed a piece of paper that had about 5 foods that I shouldn't eat, but they were basically the foods that I eat, and so I want to know what he would suggest. Thank you.
So there's no real ulcer diet that you're on. There are things that you want to avoid that may disturb your ulcer. So a lot of people avoid coffee. They avoid hot, spicy foods. They don't find them comfortable. But basically, we used to put people on a very strict ulcer diet, and it wasn't shown to really do very much. So I recommended people, you go on a Mediterranean diet. Why? It's always the best diet. You always go back to the med diet, and that means, you know, that means the right type of protein, generally fish or lean proteins that you're going to have, you know, plentiful fruits and vegetables, and avoid those things that bother it. So I wouldn't drink coffee for a few weeks. I would drink coffee. That I'd go through withdrawal from that. I wouldn't drink alcohol for a few weeks because those things can definitely disturb an ulcer. I would stay away from hot, spicy foods because those things can often disturb an ulcer. And then I would take the medicines that we use for cure ulcers, which are basically famotidine, Pepcid AC, over-the-counter without a prescription, and, of course, omeprazole, which is Prilosec, also over-the-counter without a prescription. They really promote ulcer healing, and an ulcer takes about 6 to 8 weeks to heal. Takes a long time. Do you ever get stomach problems, Tom?
No.
But what about when you had hot, spicy foods? Did that ever bother you?
Oh, no, I can take anything.
Yeah, yeah. See, now that's interesting. I get an occasional GERD at nighttime. I get some reflux at nighttime, but I can pretty much. Hey, I wonder, Carl, do you ever get trouble with your stomach?
Not so much, no. I think I'm okay on the stomach stuff, usually.
Uh-huh. Now, my father used to get ulcers, and smoking is a risk factor for getting ulcers. Mm. And I can remember he was lots of pain. Those drugs were not available, but no one ever told him to stop smoking those four cigars a day. Four stinky, smelly cigars a day. Our house, I'm sure you walked into the house and the first thing you smelled was cigar smoke. Oh, I think about it now. My kids remember that house they remember the smell of my father's house because it was filled with.
Years ago, I smoked cigars.
But you never got an ulcer from it.
No.
So you smoke, I knew you smoked a pipe. You smoked cigars?
Cigars for a while, yeah.
Do you think you looked really good smoking cigars? Are you trying to look like hip?
I don't know. I just kind of liked them, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Now, why do we think a pipe made you look intelligent?
I thought it did.
Yeah, you hold a pipe and you're thinking, right? Yeah.
For a little while, I smoked cigarettes only when I went out to a bar. And I thought I could pick up a girl.
If I was a cigarette smoker.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413.
Not very successful, I bet.
7413. Hey, exercise alters brain chemistry to protect the aging synapses?
Well, this is kind of an interesting issue. This has been going on for a while. We know that exercise is good for us, right? I mean, and do you exercise every day or you try to? Do you walk every day?
Oh, yeah, pretty much. I try to
every day. How far do you walk?
About a mile.
A mile is okay?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's important. We know that plentiful fruits and vegetables are good for your brain because it's good for the biochemistry of your body, and it's good to reduce, you know, heart attacks and strokes. So it's good for the blood vessels in the brain also. And this is looking at neurotransmitters, and they were looking at toxic proteins. So there are a number of studies. There's one famous study which also corroborates with this study at the University of California, which is out of Rush University in Chicago, where a bunch of people, and I think the study is like 25 years old. People who started there, they were older people. I think they were 50 when they got in there. Nobody had dementia. And they all said that when they died, they would give their brain to science. They would allow autopsies to go on. And lo and behold, this is a very similar study, which they looked at people who looked at people who exercised and didn't. These are longitudinal studies. And those who did not exercise had toxic proteins in their brains that are associated with neurodegenerative disorders such as Alzheimer's disease. Mm. And this is really – these are some of the first studies. This study published in Alzheimer's and Dementia that showed the people who had regular exercise did not have these toxic, you know, chemicals within their brain. And they did not have these bad proteins that seem to interfere with brain signals. Now, there's synapses in our brain. We don't have the old idea that you've got a wire kind of like – remember those old telephone – remember when you saw movies like Lassie, telephone shows like Lassie, and they go, hey, call Fred, and it would be a central – you know, it would be an operator, and she would pick up a wire and put it in. Remember those?
Yeah, sure.
Telephone operators in those old movies, they would connect from one – well, we have this idea that that's how our brain is connected, and our brain is really a web. And the web is really proteins that really work over synapses and help us. And if we have toxic proteins, the synapses may not work as well. And we've been looking for why our brain has less memory as we get older. And we're looking for ways to cure it. Exercise is a key. Mm. And that's what this shows. So I want to take a little side issue. There's something called Prevagen. Have you seen it advertised on TV?
Oh, yeah, I have. Yeah. Mm-hmm. For memory.
So Prevagen, by the way, the studies on Prevagen are not scientific studies. Now, they say they're scientific. Didn't go into a peer-reviewed journal. We call them smelly studies because they smell of an odor. They're not really very good. Prevagen, which they're advertising, contains vitamin D, 2,000 units. You can buy that for hardly anything. And jellyfish extract. which they claim is actually good for your memory. And you look at those old things on TV and people go, oh, yeah, now I can recite the Iliad. I used to remember the entire Iliad because now I'm a prevagent. And the reality is that stuff doesn't work. There's no evidence that it works. But what works is exercise. And this study shows it. So the study shows exercise reduces toxic proteins in your brain.
Thank you for saying that. I see those commercials.
It's awful.
I need to get some of
that. No, that's exactly right. So I looked up what was in it because it's jellyfish extract. So you could go down to Florida, take some jellyfish, get them out of there, put them in a blender, and then take that with a little vitamin D, and you would save a lot of money. You know how much that costs a month for the highest dose Prevagen?
No, I don't.
$100.
Ouch.
Right. Now, if you spent $100 on a pill, I bet just because you spent that money and took it, you would think your memory's better.
<You're>
And that's why
right.
It works. It's snake oil by a different name.
Anytime I remembered any little thing, I'd say,
you saw,
that's pill.
Right. Yeah, I'm taking that $100 pill. That's why when I go in the basement, I can remember what I wanted to get out of the freezer.
800-462-7413 is our number. Now, Zorba, we have a voicemail from Wisconsin.
Hey, I had a question. Zorba mentioned something about inorganic calcium causing constipation. I found that interesting. I was wondering if you could use inorganic calcium as an antidiuretic or whether or not it's just drop the inorganic stuff altogether. Thank you so much. Bye.
You know, that's very interesting. First of all, calcium is inorganic. That is true. There's no organic calcium. But it does constipate people when they take calcium, when they take calcium tablets. I've never used it for people who have diarrhea or have loose stools that maybe they should take calcium, and that might actually help reduce their loose stools versus taking something such as Imodium. So that's a great idea, something I never thought of. So it might be a way easily to treat people who have chronically loose stools, because that's a side effect of calcium. Do you have loose stools in them? How are your stools? tell me about your stools.
Thanks for asking, Zorba. Right.
Did you know there's a stool scale? Because it's called the Bristol Stool Scale.
Go
the
away.
Brits. It's from the Brits. It's from Bristol, England, and it's the Bristol Stool Scale. Yeah. And I often bring that up in the office, and there's a 1 to 6 on stools. Number 6, I don't remember what they are, hard pellets. Number 1 are watery. And then you look at these pictures, and it tells you what your stools are like, and sometimes it's a way of documenting things.
Okay.
You know, we have to document everything in the world. So I bet your stools are a number 2 or a number 3.
My stools are fine.
Your stools.
Let's move along.
Anyway, that's a good idea that I never thought of. Give calcium, and it kind of goes along with other interesting things. We give the over-the-counter sleeping pill is Benadryl. That's the only thing that basically is in most of the medications because it's a side effect of antihistamines. Maybe we should use calcium to treat chronically loose stools because it's a side effect of taking inorganic calcium. Thanks for the tip. Great idea.
Okay. Before we take a break, Zorba, we always love hearing from the grammar police, but here's a new one. This email came from a very seldom heard from division of the grammar police. This one is from the toilet police.
Oh, no, it's the...
Oh, God. All right. Okay.
And just so you know, Zorba, with the toilet police, not every case is...
It's a little over the top.
Hey, that's all right.
It's okay.
Not every case is open and shut, but they've been
open
working
and
hard.
Open and shut. You mean the lid opening and the lid shutting.
There
okay,
you go.
Got it.
They've been working hard to keep a lid on things in their department, and they're always good at maintaining a good paper trail. Okay. Okay. In lieu of suffering through any more toilet puns, the following email came to us from a listener named Rosemary, who writes, listening to your program today, I had to look up the invention of the bidet. This subject, by the way, is a good one. I have clients whose doctors have suggested using bidets for rectal issues.
Yes.
While you were talking about the Japanese toilet, I had to check. Maybe there's a recent Japanese toilet, but France was the home of invention in the late 1600s. Just thought you might like to know.
So the late 1600s, they invented the bidet? Wow. That is really something. Well, I've traveled to France a lot, and so have you. And a lot of the toilets, when you go into the washroom, there are two. There's the commode that you use for your usual number one, number two, and then there's a bidet. And it's a separate, you know, it's actually a separate seat that works. But now you can get electric bidets by Kohler in Wisconsin and other places.
That's very fascinating.
Yeah, yeah. It is fascinating. It's fascinating. I think that we should do a whole show on rectum bidets, rectal and perineal problems. I think that's what we're going to do. We're going to do that. We're only going to take emails about rectal and perineum problems, the problems down there in that area. Maybe people can write us about that. You think so?
Mm-hmm.
You're not carrying on this conversation.
I'm trying to move along. Have you been issued a citation from the toilet police? Don't worry. You'll get your bidet in court.
Oh.
Do you want to join the ever-growing grammar police force? Just post our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
More of your calls coming up. More of your emails, too. We'll be cooking up some spicy breakfast fare. All of that coming up on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Question for Zorba? Call 800-462-7413. But Zorba, before our next call, spicy masala omelet.
That's right. Now, you like omelets. You like eggs.
Yeah.
Obviously, the eggs do not interest you, omelets.
I don't get excited by omelets.
French do. I mean, they eat omelets all over the place. We just have them for breakfast.
Yeah.
But the French are like,
I can kind of take it or leave it alone.
See, I love eggs. I love omelets. So, but anyway, if you like omelets, it's nice to use a variety. Now, my mother, when she made an omelet, she would take kosher sausage, fry it up, and mix it with eggs. That's the only thing she made for an omelet.
It sounded pretty good.
May not have been the healthiest thing in the world. I did do that like a year ago. I went and bought some kosher salami, you know, and sliced it up and had it. And after I had it, I thought, it reminded me of my mom. I mean, but I gave it to Penny, and she looked at it, and she said, "You can eat it."
And you did.
And I did. Yeah. I finished the whole omelet. But this is an Indian omelet, so it's really good. Add some spice to your breakfast with spicy masala omelet. Let's start out with two jumbo eggs.
Two jumbo eggs.
Now, you don't have to use jumbo eggs. What kind of eggs do you buy, Tom?
I have whatever's in the refrigerator.
You buy refrigerator eggs, but I tend to buy jumbo eggs.
Yeah.
Carol, do you buy jumbo eggs? What kind of eggs do you buy?
Yeah, I usually get jumbo, cage-free, cruelty-free, grain-fed, lime-caught eggs.
That costs $10 a dozen versus $2.95 or $1.50.
Well worth it.
Yeah, well worth it. That's right. So start out with two jumbo eggs, okay? Mm-hmm. Two tablespoonfuls of cilantro. If you don't like cilantro, don't make the recipe. No, you can make the recipe. Substitute parsley, but cilantro, if you like it, is a good taster.
Two big teas, cilantro chopped.
Half teaspoon of ground coriander. Quarter teaspoon of salt.
Quarter little tea salt.
Sea salt would work here really well. Kosher salt, but any salt. Quarter teaspoon of ground turmeric. Two teaspoons of vegetable oil.
Two little tea vegetable oil.
You know, you're going to use, I would use, obviously, olive oil. Although I've started to use peanut oil when I fry, but I would use olive oil for this. Mm-hmm. Half teaspoon of cumin seeds.
Half a little tea cumin seeds.
And you could use ground cumin if you wanted to versus the seeds. A small clove of garlic. A chopped onion. Half a small chopped onion.
Half a small chopped onion.
Some chilies, if you've got them around, green and red chilies, either green or red or both.
Some chili.
Mm-hmm. And a tomato.
And a tomato.
Here's how to make it. Mm-hmm. In a bowl, whisk together the eggs, cilantro or parsley, ground coriander, salt, and turmeric till the whites and yolks are nicely combined. Now you're going to go and get a nonstick frying pan, put in some vegetable oil, cumin seeds over medium heat, fry the seeds until they start to pop. Add the garlic, onions, and chilies, saute until the onions are just starting to brown around the edges and are very fragrant. Then add the tomatoes. Then pour the egg mixture over everything. Turn the heat down to medium-low and let the egg cook using a spatula to gently stir the mixture until some of those curds begin to form. Stop mixing. Cook the egg until it's mostly set. Flip the omelet over. Cook the other side, and you're done, and put it onto a plate. And everybody pretty much, and when I say everybody, I mean people make omelets all the time. One of the things I've learned with an omelet we don't have here is I've gone to YouTube to improve my ability to flip the omelet and looked at, I go to YouTube University, and you can find with this how to use an omelet and what frying pan to use. And my omelets are now better. They look more restaurant quality. In fact, Penny looks at it and goes, that looks like a restaurant omelet. And you know what that means? I get points. And when you get points at home,
yes,
they count. Guys need points.
Absolutely right.
And the omelet. Now, if you want a copy of this, we don't give copies. We give directions. You can go to our website, ZorbaPastor.org. That's ZorbaPastor.org. You can look at it, and you can make a copy or put it on your phone or whatever other way you want to look at it. It's ZorbaPastor.org or through Facebook.
800-462-7413 is our number. 1-800-462-7413. And a caller with us now, Zorba, in Jacksonville, Florida. Hi.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call today.
Sure.
I'm getting old, I have to admit. I'll be 70 this summer coming up. So.
70? You're a youngster. You're a youngster.
Yeah. Well, I'm trying to live like a youngster still because, you know, I don't have a problem with alcohol, but I do like to drink maybe a little wine here and there, maybe a beer or two. And I noticed this last maybe year and a half to 2 years that if I overdo it, you know, if I do say three beers or more, or if I drink a whole big bottle of wine on my own, my legs cramp up at night when I'm asleep, and the pain wakes me up. It's like my toe wants to leave the room without the rest of the foot. And it's painful. I have to get out of bed and jump on my tippy toes like a ballerina. And, of course, my sleep is ruined by that time. And that is the only way that I can get the pain to subside. And then I massage the up and down the calf to get it to settle down. You know, well, of course, the obvious reason, the obvious cure for that is to just drop the drinking altogether. But I just limited myself to just maybe one sip of wine, maybe one bottle of beer, and that seems to take care of it. And I'm just wondering if this is a common problem with aging males, as you know, as we grow, as we mature into
as we mature. Well, your body changes. So quite often your liver can handle certain things in your 20s that it can't handle in the 40s, 60s, and 80s. And so the reality is, you know, a bottle of wine is a lot of wine. I mean, first of all, whether you're in your 20s or in your 70s, it's a lot of wine. And you've noticed that you can have, you know, you can have a can of beer, maybe one, maybe two. You can have a glass of wine. And beyond that, your body doesn't take it and it is responding to it. And so I'm a big, you know, I'm a big advocate of we have to pay attention to our body when our body sends us signals. And right now, your body is sending you a signal and saying, hey, this is really too much for my body. Can't do it. And the reality is, yes, you know, you've got a liver that's older. It's 70. It doesn't have the same resiliency that it does, that it did and does when it's younger. So the answer is actually to do that. The answer is to drink less. And from a health point of view, the answer is to drink less too. I mean, we know a drink or two for men is fine. You know, one or two cans of beer, you know, one or two glasses of wine for men, one for women. We know that beyond that, we actually produce, you know, a risk of cardiovascular health. So you hit it right on the head. You're getting old. But at 70, you're not old because time is older than you.
Yeah. The bottom line is, things get better in your 80s. Trust me.
Dr. Zorba, Tom, well, you know, I'm glad that we're all in the same club and that we are still laughing and, you know, living young. I do...
You got it, baby. You got it.
Yes, I do appreciate your follow-up with this. And I'm reminded of a joke I heard where somebody went to the doctor and said, hey, doctor, when I do this, it hurts over here. So the doctor said, well, don't do that. And that's the basic cure you're offering here.
Thanks a lot. Thank you so much for your call. Appreciate it.
We appreciate that call at 800-462-7413. And a voicemail now, Zorba, in Manitowoc, Wisconsin.
I have a question regarding frequent urination. I'll go to bed and after 2 hours, I'll wake up and then have to use the bathroom and every hour on the hour after that until I finally give up and get up. So I'm just wondering if that's a old age issue. I'm in my lower 60s because I'm also having to use the bathroom even during the day. It seems like more frequently than I should have to. Thank you. Bye.
It's an important issue. You know, when once you have to get up to go to the washroom, getting up once during the night, very common. People can go to sleep. Twice, sort of edgy. Once you get to like three or four times, it really can disturb the sleep because you're getting up, going to sleep, getting up, going to sleep, and it can be an issue. So when it's a situation like this, you really need to get evaluated because it's usually due to an enlarged prostate. Not always, but that's the most common cause. And there are medications you can get for that, such as Tamsulosin, which is a medication that we use quite often. We also use a Proscar. That's the name brand of a medication which is now generic, which helps shrink the prostate. Sometimes it's a combination of the two, that you take finasteride, which is Proscar, and Tamsulosin. But you really want to get an evaluation to see what that is. Now, is it a problem with old age? Well, first of all, you got to define out what old age is. When you're 74, 60 sounds young because it's 14 years younger than that. When you're 85, 60 sounds even younger, right, Tom? It's even younger.
Oh, yeah.
So that's it. So old age is relative. I always think old age is 25 years older than you are today. But it is an aging process in guys. You know, it happens with women too, but it's a different issue. So get evaluated. Find out if it's your prostate. There are things you can do to lower those number of times. If you're getting up every hour on the hour to go to the washroom all the time, it means that you need some help. That's what you need.
Nobody's 25 years older than I am.
No, nobody is 25 years older than you are. That's right. So there is no age for old age for you. That's exactly right. So thanks. Thanks very much for your voicemail.
800-462-7413 is our number. That's 800-462-7413. Now, before the break, Zorba, let's do that segment where we give one of your naysayers some airtime.
time. But before we hear the theme song, here's a message from a listener who loves this segment.
Hey, Dr. Zorba and Tom. It's been 3 weeks now, and you haven't played Disagreeing with the Doc. That's one of my favorite segments of the whole show. I like that whole Billy Idol thing your producer of that segment has going on. Love the show. Have a great weekend.
Okay. We get it. You love it when listeners call out Zorba for something he said on the show, so let's get on with it. Here's Disagreeing with the Doc.
Disagreeing with the Doc. Disagreeing with the Doc. Oh, oh, oh.
Oh, oh, oh.
The following email came from Crystal in Madison, Wisconsin. Crystal writes, Zorba Pastor, how dare you present a study about how more sleep equals more money due to nothing but better brain activity? No questions about socioeconomic status, health, and so many other conditions that could be correlated to sleep and stress. I've listened to you for years, but the world is evolving, and I don't think you're evolving with it. You present the studies as simplistic A equals B, and I'm guessing most of your listeners who wear their health and wellness as a self-righteous badge of honor don't question what you tell them in a matter-of-fact way, trying to back it up with science and research. So, well-rested rich people make more money than poor stressed people. Go figure.
Well, there are a couple of things. So, first of all, thank you very much for your comment. I don't think I said more sleep equals more money. I mean, I think I did that within a context. That's really taken out of context. And it really talked about sleep and efficiency and other things. And I certainly never meant to apply that sleep gives you more money and poor people who work harder and are stressed out make less money because they can't get the sleep, because that's sort of a simplistic way of looking at things. And frankly, I do not present things in a simplistic way. Not at all. That's why we have a discussion on this radio show. That's why we go back and forth. I do not say do A and do B. And I don't think that most of our listeners go, oh, gee, if Zorba says it, I'm going to follow it. And that's not the goal of the show at all. The goal of the show is to bring up questions and bring up some answers. Now, the reality is, when we bring up scientific studies and we say it points to this and shows that, that's because we're following the Wisconsin ideal of sifting and winnowing, bring up information, let people look at it, and let them decide how to do it. So I respect what she has to say, but I respectfully disagree with the simplistic way I think that she's talking about this. And I don't think we have a simplistic show. Now, it is true. Some studies we talk about, we say, well, it looks like this is going to do that. But that's what science is all about. You look at it, you measure it, you decide whether or not it's worthwhile for you. And that's what the show is all about, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. More of your calls coming up, another thought-provoking topic to talk about, and more listener emails as well. All of that coming up on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That number again, 800-462-7413. 1-800-462-7413. But Zorba, before our next call, virtual reality could help make therapy easier?
Right. This is VR. VR are these headsets that you wear that people use for gaming. They put on headsets so they look like they're going over Niagara Falls. And they cover your whole face and your eyes. And I've used it once or twice, and I find it very interesting, but I don't find it interesting enough to play with it. But anyway, this is a study that looked at VR headsets for people to discuss with therapists using an avatar. So in other words, you're not actually talking to the therapist, you're talking to a robot, which is then talking back to you and discussing things. And they found that in this particular study, about 30% of the people were more likely to talk about their negative experiences with an avatar, like a robot, than they were with an actual therapist. You find that interesting?
I don't believe it.
I don't know if I believe it or not, because, I mean, they looked at, this was a little study. They looked at their enjoyment, their understanding. Did they feel awkward? Did they feel more comfortable? But they know they're talking to an avatar. They know they're talking to a robot, somebody who doesn't really exist. So I don't think they necessarily feel comfortable. On the other hand, if you have a problem, like let's say you're reading a self-help book to try to get over a problem. Let's go one step. Let's say you're going to a video that you're looking at. Well, this is one more step where you may say, look, I don't want to go to a therapist, but I'm going to put on a virtual headset and maybe this will walk me through some problems that I have, knowing that it's not a real person behind it. Just like you read a book. In other words, it may be another way of presenting information. So I find it kind of interesting. You don't seem to buy this at all, do you?
I don't. Not a bit.
Yeah.
Does this say that this study
says? Well, the study says that people, where 30% of the people would rather look at the avatar versus a therapist. I don't believe that. I mean, it's one small study, so I don't believe that at all.
Yeah.
But I do think, just like you read a self-help book, and I read self-help books for years, many years ago. I mean, I wrote a self-help book, How to Live a Long, Sweet Life, The Longevity Code. But you may look at self-help books, and self-help might be using avatars. It might be another way to allow you to embrace information so you can discover what's good for you, sort of in a feedback loop. But I don't think this compares to a regular therapist, not at all. I don't think it's a junk study, but I think it's an interesting study because it's another way, these avatars may be another way that people can relate to things. And it also may be age dependent. It may be young people are more likely to trust an avatar than old people are to get information. I still haven't convinced you about anything.
An old person.
You're an old person. That's right. That's right. You don't even think about avatars. Yeah. Well, if you're young and think about avatars and you have that, it's a very interesting, provocative study.
Yeah. Is yours still available, by the way?
My book?
Yeah.
Of course it is. You can get it at Amazon.com. My book is always available.
You can thank me after the show. 800-462-7413.
You mean for the flurry of books that would be sold?
1-800-462-7413 is our number. Let's welcome our next caller, a listener with us in Knoxville, Tennessee. Hi.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call.
How can we help you?
Every now and then, I am bothered with hiccups. And I want you to explain to me what causes hiccups. Sometimes I may have them all day, maybe, or half a day, mm-hmm. and then I sleep with them and then wake back up in the morning. It's not very, very often, but still, I just want to know what causes hiccups.
Well, this can be a big problem. There's some people who have hiccups that never disappear, and it's this phrenic nerve that goes into spasm. I mean, hiccups, there's a nerve that works with the diaphragm, the phrenic nerve, and basically when the phrenic nerve acts up, you get hiccups. And we know there are things that can do it, eating too quickly, drinking carbonated beverages. We know children, infants get hiccups all the time. If you get chemotherapy, they can do it, toxic fumes. There are a bunch of things that cause hiccups. But the problem is, have you noticed anything that is producing the hiccups at all?
No, just have them quite often. Not often, but still, I do have them. Uh-huh. And they are very annoying, and they are nuisance.
I bet. They are a nuisance, and they are annoying, especially when they last for a long time. And it must be hard to get to sleep. How do you get to sleep when you have hiccups? It must be really difficult.
Yes, I sleep through them. Sometimes, I mean, just not, like I said, it's not a regular every night or but even still, I am bothered with them. And when when I wake up in the morning, there's hiccups.
Well, have you noticed any foods that bring it on, eating too much, eating too fast? Have you seen any kind of pattern to when the hiccups come?
No, I don't.
Mm-hmm. Well, some people just have this phrenic nerve and it just gets irritated and they get hiccups. There are some medications that you can take every day for hiccups. There was an old medication called chlorpromazine, which we don't use anymore because it has other issues involved. But if it continues, you may want to go to your doctor and get some medications that are present for hiccups. But usually, how many times a week do you actually get these hiccups?
I don't have them every week or every day and so forth. It's just every now and then.
So just every now and then. Well, there's no proven AppSecure for not getting hiccups. Eating too quickly, that's one of the issues. Carbonated beverages, alcohol, stress. What I would do is I would go and keep a journal. And when you get hiccups, I'd write down what happened during the day, what you ate, and see whether or not there's any pattern to it. Is there a food that causes it? My wife gets hiccups when she eats very hot, spicy food. Really spicy food, she'll start to get hiccups. So stomach irritation commonly does it. Stress can do it. That's about what I would do. If it bothers you all the time, there are some medications that you can take. Like I said, chlorpromazine is a drug of choice that we use for hiccups. Anticonvulsants, some of the other anticonvulsants that we use, also use for a carbamazepine, which is called Tegretol, is also used for hiccups. So there are medicines involved too if these bother you. And sometimes there are medicines you can take. I'm blocking on the name of the medication right now that you put under your tongue. You can also use nitroglycerin, believe it or not, that we use for angina. You can put that under your tongue, and sometimes that will stop a hiccup. So you might ask your doctor for some nitroglycerin, these nitro tablets that we use for angina, and that often will stop a hiccup too. That's what I would do.
Okay.
I'd look at the nitro, okay. But find out if there's a pattern. How many years has this been going on for, sir?
Oh, it ain't been going on for years. Mm-hmm. No.
Not for years.
And if it has in the past, it don't last long.
Mm-hmm. Got you. Well, look in some nitro or chlorpromazine and make a diary to look to see what's causing it for you. Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks for your call.
At 800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. Okay, Zorba, we love it when our listeners chime in with helpful information. The following email is from a listener named Steve in McHenry, Illinois. Steve writes, "Hi, Zorba, Tom, and Carl." And Brad, he didn't say that. On a recent show, you mentioned a meat pounder for making chicken breasts the same thickness.
Yes.
The ones sold for the kitchen range between $20 to $100 or more. Go to your local cheap tool store and get a rubber mallet. There are about 6 different ones, all under $10 and a couple under $5.
Mm-hmm.
Mine has lived in my kitchen drawer for a decade or more and only gets used on food. Plastic sheets or a Ziploc keeps the mallet clean. It's also good for crushing nuts or spices, etc. Love your show. Love your recipe.
Great idea. I like that rubber mallet. I've got a mallet that I use outside. We have a pool, and I use it for there. I'll get a new mallet and put it in there. Great idea. Cheap, inexpensive, and it works. Mm. Thank you. Mm. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. Have a helpful tip you'd like to hammer home to Zorba?
Thank you. Thank you, Tom.
Just paste it to our Facebook page or send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Back to your calls now, and here's a voicemail from Eau Claire, Wisconsin.
I am wondering if the Instant Pot could be a replacement for the crock pot.
Mm-hmm. Well, the Instant Pot, I have an Instant Pot and a crock pot, and they do. The Instant Pot is a replacement for a crock pot. You can definitely use it that way. The Instant Pot really is, it's a wonderful device because it allows you to pressure cook very easily. People are worried about using pressure cookers on their stove because they're worried they're going to explode. There are a lot of issues, but Instant Pot, you put it on, it's got a timer, it's easy to use for that. But yes, it is a replacement for a crock pot. You don't need two things in your kitchen. isn't. But if you lived in a house like I have for more than 40 years, you don't get rid of anything, and it just stays in the basement. And my wife and I, Penny, always joke the fact that we're gone. Our children will have to get rid of all this stuff and shovel it out. So I don't think I'm getting rid of my crock pot only because I've got a lot of room in my basement for all these devices. But yes, if you don't have an Instant Pot, by the way, they are awesome. Carl, do you have an Instant Pot?
Yeah, we do have an Instant
you
Pot.
You use it?
We use it sometimes. I kind of want to use it more, but I've been kind of lazy with the Instant Pot.
Yeah, you kind of work on it, and it's a great, great device.
Mm-hmm. 1-800-462-7413 is our number, 800-462-7413. And before we head out, Nazorba, let's do the segment where we feature what our wonderful listeners are writing on the Zorba Pastor on Your Health Facebook page. This is called Facebook Feedback.
Facebook Feedback.
Okay, Zorba, you recently posted a photo of you in a snowy field standing next to a very large snow boulder, and you wrote, "Winter fun, -5 in our backyard today." And here are a few of the replies we got from our lovely Facebook followers. First up, Judith in Superior, Wisconsin wrote, "Coming up to the northern tier of the state, 20 below zero this morning." Next, Virginia wrote, "Now you just need the body and the head. Go for it."
It was a snow boulder. That's right.
Jeff in New York quipped, "You found my kidney stone, Doc."
It does feel like that when it's in your kidney. That's funny.
And finally, Zorba, Delise wrote, in the immortal words of Frank Zappa, "Watch out where the Huskies go, and don't you eat that yellow snow." Thanks to our wonderful listeners for all the Facebook comments.
And of course, Frank Zappa.
Of course, you can always send us an old-fashioned email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
See you next week, Zorba.
Stay well, Tom.
If you miss anything during the show or just want to stream the show online anytime, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org and, of course, through Facebook.
And don't forget, you can call us anytime to leave your question at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is Carl Christensen. Our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, asking you to join us on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Did you miss something on today's show? Simply go to ZorbaPastor.org to catch up on all things Zorba. There you will find recipes from the show, links to the Facebook page, Zorba's Healthy Living articles, and you can subscribe to the weekly podcast. On the web, that's ZorbaPastor.org.